Good morning, we'll open House Transportation Committee. Before we get into the agenda, Janet, do we have any items need to be brought to attention?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. For the benefit of the audience, we're just going to reverse momentarily your Senate Bill 1228 first. No hidden meaning there. He's promised to get out of our hair in a hurry, and that gives us more time to work on the other bill, which will have to work in the long run. Well, we hope. And if he's not out of our hair in a hurry, he doesn't have a bill. We're opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 1228. Janet, could you give us a little rundown on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1228 would create additional vote call identification requirements, including specifying an area for attachment of the primary call identification number. This is a number similar to the vehicle identification number on motor vehicles. It would require votes built after 1984 to have two identical call numbers permanently affixed onto the boat. It also allows police officers to hold a boat for hull identification and disposal if hull identification number has been altered or removed and the ownership cannot be determined. Mr. Chair, Paul Donheffer from the State Marine Board is here to testify on the bill.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll try to be very brief. I'm in strong support of Senate Bill 1228. It addresses some deficiencies in current law with respect to the theft of boats and associated equipment. We work closely with the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, particularly the Marine Affairs Committee, which is chaired by Sheriff John Reichel, in developing this bill. Very briefly, it does three things. Janet indicated it allows a peace officer to act on behalf of the board. Currently, this is missing in our statutes, and peace officers have pointed it out to us. Secondly, it allows a peace officer to hold a boat for identification and disposal if the hull identification number, or the HIN, which is comparable to a VIN number, has been removed from that component. And thirdly, it clarifies which identification numbers, i.e. the hull identification number, is needed for boats to conform with federal law. And this is not a new requirement. This is simply bringing Oregon's law into conformance with existing federal law. The bill didn't have any opposition in the Senate. It passed unanimously. It makes basically technical changes to our statute on support.
The question I would have is, what about a documented vote that doesn't have numbers?
This applies to undocumented vessels.
Documented vessels will have to have numbers posted to them, is that correct?
Documented vessels have numbers that are issued by the United States Coast Guard.
But with all due respect, they're not put on the side of the boat.
Chairman, the numbers that we're talking about here, the hull identification number, is not the registration number that we issue to Oregon boats displayed on the bow. The hull identification number is usually a 12-digit number that's embedded into the transom. It's a very small number. Yeah, it's like a VIN on an automobile.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? That was selfish. I'm not sure that's the number. Janet?
Mr. Chair, what size is it applied personal charter for craft?
Mr. Chairman, it would apply to recreational boats, including personal watercraft.
No further questions? Well, thank you, Paul, and we have no one else scheduled to testify on the bill, so we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1228. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1228. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 1228 holds the past recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 1228 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, yes, is there additional cost or fee for doing this, for having this number added?
We could ask Mr. Dunneth for that. Is there additional cost or fee for this service that we're offering?
Chairman, Representative Logan. No, there's no cost associated with it. These numbers are already to the vessel by the manufacturers. What we're really doing is just conforming the language in Oregon's law to the current federal practice, which is to have these numbers for the hull.
Okay.
Thank you. Any discussion? We'll refer to Colorado.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Langer.
Aye.
Representative Logan.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye. Representative
Wells. Yes. Senate Bill 1228 is passed with low with a two-pass recommendation. Representative Loken or Reverend Wells had his hand up. You don't carry the bill. You did this to me last week. Representative Loken will carry this.
All right, thank you. I'll be happy
to. Thank you. Next bill, we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 583. Again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 580, Senate Bill 583, was sponsored by Senator George, chief sponsor, and would require persons only under 21 years of age to wear motorcycle helmets. Mr. Chair and members, the current motorcycle helmet applies to all motorcycle and moped operators and to their passengers, so it's any age operator and any age passenger. The current requirement is a result of legislation that was referred to voters by the 1987 legislature and passed in the 1988 primary election. Oregon also had a mandatory helmet law between 1968 and 1977. Failure to wear a motorcycle helmet is a Class D traffic infraction. The violation was reduced from a Class C traffic infraction by the 1995 legislature, so it reduced the penalty in the 95 session. Mr. Chair, this bill did pass both houses of the legislature last session and was vetoed. I have a copy of the veto message if anyone would like to see that.
Thank you. Thank you. You have a list of 10 people signed up to testify. Session today is at 10 o'clock. We will adjourn about 10 minutes to 10 or before, so we appreciate your cooperation. I doubt that we'll go into work session on this bill. We'll wait till Wednesday morning and have our work session on it. That way we can have plenty of time for testimony and then discuss the committee. Mike can discuss it Wednesday morning. No games are being played. That's why I'm giving it to you up front. You know what's going on. We'll just go down the list if that's okay with everybody. And as they signed up, we do have one that's more than 100 miles away. If we get to where the time is running out, we'll call that person forward also before the time runs out. First up is Melvin Yeager from Abate in Linn County.
Good morning, Mr. Yeager. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Melvin Yeager. I live in Linn County in Albany. I am the Education Director for ABATE of Oregon and have been for about 10 years. I'm here today to represent myself and some other motorcyclists that may or may not be able to be here and that may or may not be members of this ABATE of Oregon organization. We have a common interest in this matter. We've lived with this helmet law for quite a while and we've done a lot of studies on it. We've come up with some very interesting conclusions that seem to prove our point that we do not need a helmet law. We, ABATE of Oregon and Bike Pack of Oregon, have worked together long and hard to make education number one focus with motorcyclists in Oregon. We're trying to educate, and we have educated many, many of our members in how to ride safely, how to protect themselves in their interest of riding the motorcycle back and forth to work or for pleasure. We have instituted programs that not only teach people how to ride motorcycles safely, but we've taught many citizens of the state of Oregon why it's important and how to look out for motorcyclists that are using the road with them. In 1993, we started the Motorcycle Awareness Program that put the message to the kids that are in driver's education training in the schools in the state of Oregon, and about 1,500 of those kids every year are taught our message through volunteers and through the financial backing of Oregon, of ABATE of Oregon. We provide the copying and the training material, the education or the volunteers go out and actually teach the classes to the kids. The class consists of about 45 minutes of class time and about a 15-minute riding demonstration that shows them how deceptive the size and shape of a motorcycle can be to somebody who's not aware or not looking for them. Since 1993, and actually just before that, we started noticing a dramatic decline in the number of accidents in the state of Oregon. Along with the number of accidents declining was the number of deaths associated with it. And it was about the same time that the helmet bill started. So many people erroneously contributed the lack of deaths, motorcycle-related deaths, to the helmet bill. But we know different. We have also compared the statistics in states that have helmet laws and people that in states that do not have helmet laws, and we find that there is no significant difference in the death rate, but there is a difference in the accident rate. The accident rates in states that do not have a helmet bill is slightly lower than the ones that do have helmet laws. So we have come to the conclusion that the helmet does not prevent an accident. It in no way contributes to avoiding the accident. As a matter of fact, when the accident occurs, there's a 50-50 chance that it'll do you some good or that it may harm you, depending on what happens in that accident. In many instances, the weight of the helmet snapping the head forward can sever the spinal cord or the spine of the neck and cause fatalities and or permanent injury. Some instances, if a person were to hit his head on the ground in a correct or a proper situation, it may prevent some injuries to his head. But this is a problem that I think is a toss-up. And because of this, we clearly feel that it would be the citizen's right or the right of the rider to make the decision whether he wants to take that chance. And we would ask that this committee consider very carefully what we're asking for, and it's not, and I repeat, not an instance where we're saying the helmet is a bad thing. It's never been our intention to say that. There's instances where it's good or it's bad, and we only ask that we be given back our right to choose whether we want to take that chance, whether we want to wear the helmet and under which conditions. That's all we're asking, and we thank you very much, and we ask if there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Yeager. At this point, Representative Lieberman.
Last session we passed this bill out, and the governor vetoed it. It looks like that governor is going to be there for this session and next session. Is there any indication that he has changed his view on this bill?
I think we'll have to refer that to another testimony. I'm not that closely associated with the governor's feelings, but I believe some of the other testifiers are.
Thank you, Mr. Yeager. Yes, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens to the human head when it's rubbed against the pavement at 35 miles an hour?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hill, if the person is wearing a helmet and he hits the ground at 35 miles an hour, there's several things that could happen. The helmet could rupture, sending particles of fiberglass into the skull and into the scalp. Could cause injuries. If he was not wearing a helmet, then obviously he's going to make contact with the road with his head and probably tear off scalp, maybe an ear. Could possibly fracture the skull.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yeager, for coming forward. We have the next up is Kristen from the Oregon State Police, and I can't read your writing, my friend. Looks like playlist. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Montgomery, members of the committee. My name is Trooper Chris Cuevas. I'm a trooper with the Oregon State Police. I'm assigned to the motorcycle unit out of the Portland Patrol Office. I've been with the motorcycle unit about 2.5 years. I've driven motorcycles in the past as well. I have a very brief testimony here that I'd just like to go over. I'm going to kind of go into my own testimony, and then if you have any questions, I'd be more glad to answer that for you. The purpose of my testimony here today is just to establish for the record that the Oregon State Police are opposed to Senate Bill 583. Quite briefly, we're in opposition to theory related to transportation safety and the desire to reduce the amount of severity of highway injuries in this state. I'm sure you're going to hear testimonies pro and con. That's the standing of the Oregon State Police. I'd just like to add a couple of things that were mentioned already, and that's about rider safety and the awareness and that there's more education out there. I'll be the first one to say that constant ongoing training and awareness of the things around you from a police officer standpoint is very important. But I will also tell you from experience that no matter how much you train, and this department has allowed us to train every single month. We train high speed, we train low speed. In every situation, no matter how much you train, when that situation presents itself and you're not ready for it, no matter how much training you got, no matter how much time you spend on it, you're going to react just like an animal does. You're going to grab brakes, and you're going to grab this, and it'd be nice to either have that seatbelt on or that helmet on to protect you. I don't know of any instance where I have personal experience with the helmet during training where I went down during a controlled environment exercise, and that helmet saved me. Same with my children on a bicycle going sideways right into a curb wearing that bicycle helmet. The other thing that was mentioned also was the other thing I'd like to mention is even if there wasn't a helmet law that nobody had to wear them, the Department of State Police and any other agencies out there, the policy, we would still be wearing this helmet because we believe in them so much. I think if there was any indication out there at all that these helmets are unsafe in the least bit, that we wouldn't be wearing them. I don't believe that's the case. And as a policy, we would still continue to wear them, even if nobody else was. Pretty much that's my testimony, Chairman and members of the committee. If there's any questions that you have of me, I'd be more than glad to answer them for you.
Thank you, Chris. Reverend Wells has a question.
Thank you. If people weren't wearing a helmet, what would they use for eye protection?
Now, it's funny you mentioned that during the new Carissa incident over there, you know, everything that we wear, I think, is the latest in safety. And even for a brief moment, one of our troopers was just standing there out there on the coast doing his duties, and something flew in his eyes. Quite frankly, there's goggles that you can wear, protective eyeglasses. I would hope that someone would wear at least that. The amount of gravel we have on the roads here, or in inclement weather, those things come at you like the speed of simulations or BB gun or something. And I got whacked with it. And that's one reason we went to the four-fifths helmet, that gravel and stuff flying around. I can't imagine not wearing it. We also have a three-quarter helmet, and we wear safety glass with that as well. But yeah, we do have safety goggles, and they're available.
Other questions? Yes, Reverend Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Trooper, have you had any injuries from your motorcycle unit that can be traced to using the helmet?
Well, not at all. If anything, during the testimony that Senior Trooper Scott Lomar, he's our lead instructor, gave, he investigates all accidents where a police officer is involved, a motorcycle riding officer is involved, and he attributes a lot of the lack of injury because of the wearing of the helmet.
And a follow-up question, sure. For Mike. Do you engage in high-speed pursuits on your motorcycle?
From time to time we do. Once a year we train high-speed. During the high-speed incident 2 years ago is when I went down wearing a helmet, and luckily all I sustained was injuries to my ankle. But I was rolling down the highway at about 50 miles an hour after an exercise, laying on my back. Scraped the whole back of the helmet, and had not been wearing, I think it's pretty clear what would happen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking time to be here this morning. Did you have a question? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Ray is the next on our list.
accident you can work on too.
Sorry. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Ray. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for Bike Path of Oregon. Most of you are familiar with Bike Path, I'm sure. I'm sure most of you have had a visit or two from one of our members. Bike Path of Oregon urges your approval of Senate Bill 583. There's a lot of reasons why motorcyclists do prefer to make their own choices in regards to safety equipment. And like any other group of individuals, those reasons may differ from person to person, and many will quote freedom of choice. Many of the well-intentioned non-motorcyclists who oppose helmet reform do seize on this as the only issue, but it is far more than freedom. Good public policy is hopefully drawn along the tenets of sound engineering principles. Unfortunately, not all of our laws will reflect that. Some, like the current helmet law, were well-intentioned, but we've learned much in the past 11 years. Many of the assumptions that moved to helmet mandates in the past have been proven false, and what honest research now shows is that helmet laws are basically irrelevant in controlling accidents and deaths. Unfortunately, Teresa Hefker could not be here today, and she was Bike Path representative to the Oregon Health Policy Institute get-together that happened in January. The background on it was that the Department of Health, some of you may remember, that were here last session, basically made some pretty wild claims about how much unhelmeted motorcyclists would cost the state of Oregon. I will say that I understand where they're coming from, and I understand as a public policy, it's hard enough for most people to agree that they were in error, let alone a government agency or bureaucracy sometimes, but the fact is that, to their credit, they put together a group that we were able to participate in, and you'll have received a copy of it. You may have seen it already. There's a list in there of who was on this panel. They took very good care. The person who set it up from OHSU took very good care to try to make it as unbiased a panel as possible. It did have us on it, and on the other end, it had a representative from the Center for Disease Control as well as some professional medical researchers. And what the most interesting thing about it was that there's an awful lot of studies out there that are bad studies. And by bad, I mean that they either start with the assumption that helmets must be good, so therefore the conclusion supports that, you know, the outcome supports that original assumption, or they're too small a statistical pool. And that's largely the case with the studies you have coming out of Oregon. Much as I love our state, we're too small a statistical pool to be a valid survey. I mean, legitimate studies are going to look at tens of thousands of riders and spread across many states. The, some of the most famous studies used to propagate helmet laws are the very studies that were rejected by these professional researchers. And I'll bet, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that some of those rejected studies are going to be ones that you'll hear later or may have already heard. So what I want to talk about real quick is the facts, myths and facts, actually, about helmet laws. One myth, and I know that probably some of this is just people not, the words coming out different ones, what they intend to say, but I've heard some people say, well, helmets prevent accidents. That simply is not true. Helmets are passive devices. They cannot in and of themselves have an effect on whether you're involved in an accident or not. Another myth is that fatalities have plummeted since the helmet law took effect. Actually, that's not a myth. It's a fact. The fatalities have plummeted since 1988, since July of 88, actually. A lot of people mistakenly add all of 1988 into a helmet law counting, but actually it didn't take effect until July. But also 8 years prior to 1988, fatalities were on their way down. In fact, 1988 appears to be the middle of an already downward trend. Is it, I think the fact is that there was some difference in the amount of miles traveled. There was some difference in registration, but I think largely, the early 80s is when Team Oregon and some other motorcycle, national motorcycle
training programs for the either inexperienced or even the experienced motorcyclists started to take effect. In fact, we're still reaping the benefits from those nowadays because each year, nationwide, motorcycle fatalities are at an all-time low. In fact, it was just over 2,000 motorcyclists nationwide for the last year that we have records for, which I believe is 1997. So that's where the connection, I believe, lies. Now, can helmets have an effect? In some cases, that may be. But I really, on a personal note, resent the fact that motorcycle helmet laws are getting credit for the work that a Abate of Oregon and the Motorcyclists of Oregon put in to creating the team, what is now the Team Oregon training program and on the motorcycle awareness program. Those things have an effect, and I really resent them being just made to be irrelevant by having the helmet law take all the credit. Another myth is that states that amend their helmet laws have had an increase in fatalities. Not true. In fact, many states over the past 3 years have removed their helmet restrictions for adults. Only one, Arkansas, had any increase in fatalities. It also had a dramatic increase in ridership and miles traveled on motorcycles. Responsible researchers do know that it's the death rate, not gross numbers, that tell the facts. The only legitimate ways to measure the effect on fatalities is by deaths per accident or per 100 accidents or per million miles traveled. Otherwise, you may have statistical anomalies. And I think that there's a lot of reasons why people look at helmets and say, it's just common sense. Or they'll say, it just makes sense to wear a helmet. Well, I'm a motorcyclist of about 15 years now, and there are many times I've lived in other states that have had voluntary helmet use laws, and I have chosen at some times to wear a helmet in those states, and there are times when I have chosen not to. And just like any other safety device, there's a time and a place for everything. The one-size-fits-all band-aid approach where somebody says, wear a helmet, now you're safe, and that's all the attention they pay to motorcycling safety is not the answer in the future. And I think that that you may see now why BikePak believes that the helmet mandate for adults is bad public policy. And lastly, getting back to freedom, it is a fact that all laws restrict someone's freedom to a certain extent. I think the duty of the legislature, in my opinion, is to only restrict those freedoms when there's legitimate intellectual, not just emotional, reasons to do so. We believe that the helmet mandates for adults in Oregon and in the minority of states that still have universal helmet laws are an experiment that largely has failed to reduce fatalities and has failed to reduce injuries. And on the OHPI report, now, although this report didn't say everything I would like, it certainly did not substantiate last session's claims of millions of dollars of costs from unhelmeted motorcyclists. In fact, it says in the report that it's not possible to measure the effect. So if somebody comes up with some hard numbers, then they've largely been manufactured, in my opinion. I am not saying these things to point fingers at anybody. It's just that when we have a, when as motorcyclists in Oregon, we are made to, we have actually been in some cases almost accused of being personally the ones responsible for making the state go off budget. Now we take a little offense at that. I think that, there's no proof that helmet mandates save money or lives, and I ask that you support out of committee and on the floor Senate Bill 583. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
We have a couple of them here. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry Ms. Hepburn isn't here because I was reviewing this report this weekend and there's some questions that I have about it, but perhaps you can answer them.
I'll do my best.
On page 3 in the discussion section, it says, all members of the panel believed there was protective value in wearing helmets under most circumstances. Do you agree with that statement? It's in the yellow.
Oh, okay, thank you. In the yellow section.
On page 3.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I'm not 100% know this word for word, but basically, in where it says wearing a helmet is one of a number of factors, is that what you're talking about?
if you look at the bottom of page 2, it says questions, conclusions, and discussions.
Oh, okay.
Then you go to the top of page 3, and there's a discussion.
Yes,
and
okay.
And that first sentence under discussion just takes part of it. It says all members of the panel, I want you to remember that, believed there was protective value in wearing helmets under most circumstances.
Yes.
Okay, and Ms. Hepker was a member of the panel.
Right.
Okay. Then down below, in that same paragraph, it says, but the primary issue for motorcycle advocacy groups is the mandatory nature of the laws, not necessarily the protection afforded by helmet use. Do you agree with that statement?
I would say that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, yes, that is largely the issue with a lot of motorcycle advocacy groups, but I think that it's important that we look at this report and not take pieces out and paraphrase it, but take it in totem, because it says a great many things, and in the prior paragraph it does say that the presence or absence of a helmet may not be much of a factor in reducing the occurrence and severity of head trauma. As to whether it's a good idea to wear one in most circumstances, that is not the same thing as all circumstances, and again, that's why we would have to have the choice to determine those circumstances for ourselves. Because as a motorcyclist, I feel I know more about motorcycle safety and wearing and appropriate times to wear a helmet than many people who have never set foot on a motorcycle. Does that answer your question?
Well, sort of, because the following paragraph disputes a little bit about what you say. It says those articles reported increased injury occurrence and severity for those without a helmet as compared to those with a helmet.
Okay, there were, Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, there were many, many studies drawn from on this, and I did not actually take part on this. I know that Teresa may very well be available to visit on Wednesday. I'm hoping so, because she owns a small business and was not able to get away today. But
we don't plan to have a public hearing
on
Wednesday, but any of the members who would like to contact, this gives them 3 days to contact.
Exactly. I'm trying to answer your question, but the fact is that from the data available, however, the data did not allow the panel to, okay, yeah, I see which one you're talking about. Bear in mind that this report is a consensus, and in some cases, we don't agree with everything that's said in there, but I think they did a pretty fair job if you take the entire report and look at everything it says. As far as the articles reported increased injury occurrence, many of those articles are reports of cases from trauma centers, and bear in mind that trauma centers see generally only the most severe or the most dramatic accidents. It is not necessarily an indication of the overall view of motorcycle accidents or motorcycling in general.
We have one final
question. You're going to get an answer to that.
Yes. I have one final question, a philosophical question, if I might. How do you feel about seatbelts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, seatbelts are a completely different issue. I personally feel that wearing a seatbelt is a good idea, but seat belts and helmets are not the same thing for this very key reason. Seat belts are proven to work, and proven in a large degree to work. Helmets have a very minor, if any, benefit shown when you look at death rates in wearing accidents in states that do not have a helmet law. So they're not the same issue.
Thank you.
You have a real nice question. Seat belts on motorcycles. Watch out, my friend. We have 10 more people who want to talk. We have eight people up here who want to talk, 6 people. So we will proceed that direction. Representative Lavis and Locum and Hill. Wells, did you have your hand up?
We'll see what it looks like when we get here.
Mr. Chairman, the question I asked earlier is that the governor vetoed this bill last session. Governor's going to be around for 2 more legislative sessions, and looks like any indication he's going to change his view on this law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raymond, you guys are tired of seeing us every year, I would imagine. We have had some discussion with the governor's office. We've had some discussion with colleagues of the governor. We believe that we have a little bit more information than we did 2 years ago. We have definitely seen the results of some studies a few years ago. Our hope is that if the governor will look at the facts with a with a clean slate, so as it were, that we feel that we make a very good case. And as far as do I have a solid answer, I can't say that I do because I haven't been able to get in to actually meet with the governor to ask him.
Mr. Ray, on the assumption, which I'd be surprised if the governor changes his mind on this, but on the assumption the governor's going to veto this, wouldn't we be better off doing this as a referral to the voters, which in fact is where this came from in the first place, which allows even me to vote for it as a referral to the voters. And as much as I disagree with the law and your freedom of choice, the voters enacted it, in my opinion, I'm stuck with that. Shouldn't we just do this as a referral to the voters and, one, skip another veto by the governor, and, two, put it right back to where it came from in the first place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, no, I don't believe that we should do that for this reason. The one of the benefits of a representative democracy, and this is my opinion, is it allows you all to study the issues a little more in depth and maybe arrive at a more intellectual answer than an emotional answer, number one. And number two, in the practical realities of politics, we don't have the money as an organization to counteract some of the misinformation and flat out mistruth that is going to come out in a campaign like that. Although I understand that sentiment, in this case we're actually asking for you all to take an in-depth look at the public policy and determine if the voters made the right choice. There's been many cases where this body has had to manipulate or that's not a good word to tweak something that the voters have passed. And I feel this is a valid time to do that.
Thank you. Next on our list is Representative Logan.
I think I'm going to pass the name at this time.
Thank you. Representative Hill.
You're in your motorcycle and you're stationary and you have a choice to put a helmet on or not put a helmet on, but you're going to be pushed over, your head's going to hit the pavement. What's your choice? Helmet or no helmet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I don't think that at a low speed that I would choose either. I don't think it would make much difference. I've actually had a similar kind of accident when, although it is a little embarrassing, at one time when I forgot to unlock the forks on my motorcycle and it kind of rolled out from under me. And I was not wearing a helmet and rolled up on my back just like I did when I was a kid off my skateboard and came up just fine. So I would say that's not relevant and it probably doesn't have a whole lot of relevance to real world situations because that doesn't happen in the real world. Personally.
Thank you. That was supposed to be a yes and no.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Bill, did you want to go ahead from here for a minute?
Yeah, sure, thank you. My next question was, you then put forward motion on that motorcycle, and you're going to fall over. Your wonderful skills aren't there for whatever reason. It's an accident. Accidents are that you don't get to control the environment. And there's one thing. Your head's going to hit the pavement. Do you want a helmet or no helmet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bill, if I knew ahead of time I was going to have an accident, I'd certainly wear a helmet. I just don't believe that I will know that ahead of time.
Thank you very much. We have one more question. Representative Logan?
Quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the executive summary, and the second question says, does wearing a helmet increase the probability of having a crash or increase the probability of any types of injuries? And I don't see data there that says it does increase the probability of a crash. And I'm just kind of wondering if that substantiates what you were trying to tell us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loken, it has more to do with the fact that there's never really been any study done on that subject, is my understanding. That's not really been a topic of research.
Thank you very much. Thanks again for coming. Appreciate you being with us. Next on our list is Grant Dickinson from the Health Division and Scott Gallant from Oregon Bay. He was here a moment ago. this is his only chance, so he better get in there. Thank you very much for being here, Doctor.
Thank you. Chairman Cummery, members of the committee for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the State Health Officer and Deputy Administrator for the Oregon Health Division. The division is part of the Department of Human Resources, and I'm here today to express the department's strong opposition to Senate Bill 583. And first, I would like to say that we do not see as the helmet law as a be-all, end-all. We think that the education and training that Abate and others have done on this is very important as well. It should be a part of a comprehensive motorcycle safety efforts. However, we don't think it's an either-or. We think that they are complementary. And in fact, last session, we did support the enhancement of education and training bill that was passed last session. But the division in the department opposes the bills for three reasons, and the first is that we do believe that motorcycles, helmets are effective injury prevention devices and that the helmet laws work. And you've already heard some discussion about the differences of opinion on data. And in fact, the health division last session was accused of manipulating the data. And so one thing that we thought was important was to try to get the best consensus viewpoint we could on what the existing research information shows. And consequently, we contracted with the Oregon Health Policy Institute, which is an independent body up at OHSU, to take a look at this. As you've heard, the group that they pulled together included a representative from BikePak, a representative from Abate, a representative from the Centers for Disease Control Prevention, Injury Prevention Center, and then a couple of researchers who aren't involved in motorcycle helmets but are good researchers. And people are going to read the report differently, but as far as I can see, I think that the report really pretty strongly says that motorcycle helmet works. Motorcycle helmets are protective devices, and that motorcycle helmets work. And I just like to go through the four questions that we specifically asked the panel to address. The first is, do motorcycle helmets prevent any injury? And the response, and I'm quoting here, is that data indicate that helmets reduce the probability of head trauma and reduce the severity of head injury. They went on to say that at very low speeds and at very high speeds, they may not make a difference, but those moderate speed crashes, they are effective devices. Second question we asked was, do motorcycle helmets increase the risk for injuries? And the panel actually changed that question to, does wearing a helmet increase the probability of having a crash or increase the probability of any types of injury? And again, there was no data to show that they increased the probability of a crash, although motorcycle advocates continue to say that they're concerned about that issue. And what the report did say is that there are some rare and unusual circumstances where a helmet may contribute to an injury. The third thing was, are motorcycle helmet laws effective? And again, it says, it needs to be a comprehensive package we're talking about, that I refer you to the last sentence there where it says, available data indicates that following enactment of universal helmet laws that require all riders to wear helmets, a reduction in the number of head injuries and fatalities occur. And then our fourth and final question was, do motorcycle helmet laws save public funds? And again, it qualifies it by saying you can't say exactly how much. That's difficult to come to. But to the extent that helmet laws increase the use of helmets and thereby reduce incidence and severity of head injuries, the helmet laws should reduce general health care costs. And again, these are not my words. This came out of a consensus committee where we really did try to get the best look at existing data from a broad group of people representing a variety of interests. And like I said, as far as we can see, motorcycle helmets are effective safety devices. They prevent injuries and deaths, and they save public funds. So for us, the issue really comes down to then a personal freedom versus a public responsibility issue. And from the health division's viewpoint, the public responsibility issue weighs out. For the privilege to drive on the road, I obey traffic laws, I drive responsibly, and I wear my seatbelt. And I don't see that it's any more onerous to expect motorcycle riders to wear a helmet as well as to obey traffic laws and drive carefully as well. And I think that this really does make a difference, because we are talking about a public policy here which is going to affect public dollars. While we can't say exactly how much, it is going to increase health care costs, it's going to increase vocational rehabilitation costs, it's going to increase nursing home costs, it's going to increase welfare costs. I mean, it will cost money, and again, we feel that public responsibility is an important issue here. And then the third and final issue for why we oppose the repeal is that the people of Oregon have already spoken on this issue. They passed the referendum in 1988 by a 2-to-1 margin. It passed in every single county of the state. And then while that was a while ago, the research firm of Davis and Hibbets conducted a study in 1997, and they said that, and again I'll quote, by 73% to 22%, so that's almost a 3-to-1 margin, Oregonians opposed changing the current law that requires all motorcycle riders to wear a helmet. So for those three reasons, we are opposed to Senate Bill 583, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Loken. Any questions?
Thank you. Just very quick one. You mentioned that helmets, from your summary, executive summary, states that helmets can cause certain types of injuries, such as brain stem and spinal cord injuries and rib fractures, and you added to that these are rare. I would think those... you're going to have an accident that might be not so rare. If helmets can cause those injuries, it probably is not so rare.
Chair Montgomery, Representative Loken, and I don't have a copy of the report in front of me, but as I recall, it did say in the report that those were rare and unusual circumstances. And the most common injury from a motorcycle crash would be, to the head or nervous system would be brain trauma rather than a fractured spine. I equate this to what we see in car crashes as well. You know, I can come up with anecdotal stories about how a seatbelt strangled somebody in a car crash or how not wearing a seatbelt threw them out of the car and then the car was crushed. But for every one of those anecdotal stories, I think, there's hundreds of stories where people were saved by seatbelts. And I think it's the same with motorcycle helmets. There's a few injuries that are caused by motorcycle helmets. The vast majority of times, motorcycle helmets are actually protected.
Thank you, Dr. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What happens to the human head when it hits the stationary object going 35 miles an hour?
Chair Montgomery and Representative Hill, what happens is that the hard part of the head is stopped immediately, and the tissue inside, the brain, actually continues to move, and it hits itself against that hard object, which causes the brain trauma.
One more question, then we're moving on here.
What happens to the human head if it's struggling along the pavement 35 miles an hour without a helmet?
Chair Montgomery and Representative Hill, again, there would probably be some of that head trauma if it was bouncing up and down, and then you're also going to get significant lacerations and abrasions, contusions as well.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. We have two others here. I see Scott came in and Brad Higby. Would you like to come up together and briefly give a statement? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. I represent Oregon physicians. We have over 6,000 members, obviously, throughout the state. This issue, I have been around since this issue has been debated and ultimately passed. And I have not heard a different argument yet on this issue. There are some things, though, that I think make sense. One is using common sense. You know, the questions that were just asked before I walked up here is beginning to get to the idea of common sense. The idea of having a human head hitting pavement or some stable object, literally, that is what happens. The brain, the tissue matter, continues moving. The costs associated with those sorts of traumas are huge. If anyone has looked at the maximum amount of cover, PIP coverage, you can quickly surmise that someone is going to significantly subsidize the health costs for individuals who happen to have a traumatic injury caused by an accident from a motorcycle. This legislation does not meet the common sense test. It doesn't meet an economic sense test in the process either. I can't encourage the committee enough to seriously consider whether it really makes a lot of sense, medical policy sense, to eliminate or to adopt this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, hi, my name is Grant Hickey on behalf of the Oregon chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. You've got the testimony that I submitted. So just very briefly, let me say, Mr. Chair, that the statistics that are presented there are national data that we've generated from the National American College of Emergency Physicians. Don't want to get into quibbling about fun facts to know and tell, but it's pretty apparent this is very serious. And the evidence, I believe, clearly shows that helmet motorcyclists are 85% less likely to incur severe, serious, and critical injuries than unhelmeted riders. Pretty simple and straightforward. As Mr. Gallant was mentioning, some common sense applies. The testimony also presents a little bit of a comparison between some states that have adopted and then repealed motorcycle helmet laws, showing a somewhat dramatic instance in some states, increase in the actual motorcycle fatality rate. Finally, Mr. Chair, let me just focus on one aspect of the bill that I haven't heard discussed before, so I don't want to be too repetitive. I know that you'd probably like to spend 5 or 6 hours talking about this bill today, but to disappoint you, I'm sorry, but focusing on the very last page of my testimony on the element of the bill that would allow, that would continue the the requirement to have a motorcycle helmet on people 21 years and under, just three quick facts to suggest that that's not as good an idea as some people might think. Frankly, most accidents and most motorcycle fatalities occur to people 21 years or older. So you're not getting at the real dramatic numbers here by just focusing on youth. Secondly, the helmet laws that apply only to minors are difficult to enforce. It could be difficult for a law enforcement officer to note the age of a motorcyclist that's driving by. It's difficult enough in some bars and taverns that you can argue when you've got identification there to show. And finally, there's simply not a bay. The data shows that in jurisdictions with minors only helmet laws, more than 60% of the minors killed in motorcycle crashes were not using helmets as required by law. With that, be happy to answer any questions or further difficult ones to Mr. Gallant, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you both for coming. We'll move on. One question is all, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All of us, probably when we're much older, may spend, at least some of us may spend our final days in a convalescent facility. But someone with a traumatic head injury has a younger person. You've indicated here your cost in the initial year, like $170,000. Someone with that type of an injury, given the fact that they, heart and lungs might be as good as they ever were, even if they've had the injury, is there a general feeling that the public would be picking up the cost for a prolonged period?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I can only say that I assume that it would, and either insurance or the public itself would be bearing the cost.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for coming. I see Senator George. Would you like to come forward? We have 6 more people. We do have one that has come from over 100 miles. That person will be next. And if we don't get through today, we will let the other people speak. We'll close the public hearing, and then they will be invited to speak before us. That way, you'll have to say. So we'll take no more on the list. Thank you, Senator, for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, State Senator Gary George, District 2. And I'm here to encourage you to vote yes on this bill today. And the reason for that is, is we're talking about relative risk. And one of the things I did on the Senate side is I carried the bill was to deal with the idea of how do these numbers actually look compared to other issues. And one of the numbers that I used was that in the last 10 years, we've lost 68,000 teenagers in automobiles. And of those, 40,800 were not wearing seatbelts. Now, the issue was, if you think about that, 40,800 of them weren't wearing seatbelts. All 50 states require seatbelts. So the law didn't have much to do with it. Training was the issue. Training has been the issue in Oregon. Our bike path and the other groups have demonstrated the total responsibility that they have by providing good training. The answer to safely riding a motorcycle is avoid an accident. In fact, I was noticing a new BMW motorcycle yesterday and actually had kind of an oscillating headlight similar to a train. And the reason a train has that is they're trying to warn people that of an impending danger. But if I could run through a few numbers for you that I found pretty interesting. In Oregon, this is 1996, the last numbers which you get from the cause of death in Oregon, we had 550 people died in motor vehicles, and we had 329 home accidents, 260 deaths by fall, 180 deaths by medicine, drugs, and poisons, and we had 75 people who died on bikes and while walking, 75, 47 drowning, and we had 30 people die from complications from medical procedures and suffocations from food and other products, 28 people died. Total motorcycle, 27. Estimated about 3 of the 27 were not wearing helmets. That's the last number we were able to take a look at. I think you had presented to you the accident ratios and statistics comparing the voluntary helmet states with the mandatory helmet states. Did you all receive that? What the comparison is that in the voluntary helmet states, you had 2.90 fatalities per 100 accidents. And in the mandatory helmet states, you had 2.98 fatalities per 100 accidents. The issue there is obviously, I think what that clearly points out, that it is not helmets, it's avoiding accidents. This is an issue. I have ridden motorcycles, started off with motor scooters probably at about 7 years old and have ridden ever since. I do not ride on the highway today because I will not wear a helmet. I just absolutely refuse to wear a helmet. And the reason for that is I have a kink in the back of my neck that was caused by a helmet. And because I sit kind of tall in the saddle, caught a limb on the top of the helmet, kicked my helmet back. This was in the early days where the helmet sit in the middle of the neck. And literally, I can push my head backwards and feel the effect of that. This is not an anti-helmet bill. In the states that have gone to voluntary training, what you're going to, or voluntary compliance, what you're going to find is that the overwhelming majority of people continue to wear helmets. In Oregon, when you look at the Oregon training program, it's very strongly directed towards encouraging people to wear helmets. The issue that I want to raise with you today is the idea that this is an area in which I think responsible people who have been properly trained make a responsible decision about whether they're going to wear a helmet or not. And just remember that, you know, we had 75 people dying on bicycles, and most of those, of course, wearing helmets, and pedestrian accidents, and we had 27 total people dying on motorcycles, approximately 3 not wearing helmets. So if we put the issue in perspective, we look at the 550 in motor vehicle deaths, home accidents, 329. We realize this is a real small piece of the accident figure.
That's you have to answer the question.
Yes.
I think Senator Hill has a question.
Representative Hill.
Sorry about that.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, what happens to the human head when it hits pavement going 35 miles an hour?
Well, probably the same thing that would happen inside of a helmet, and that is a tremendous trauma occurs. One of the things, I don't know if you guys have seen the studies, but the Swedish government did a study in which they analyzed the helmet. One of the most dangerous things that can happen on a motorcycle is to be wearing a helmet that has the real low face piece that comes down and guards your chin. Because what happens is, if the person, in fact, showing off the motorcycle in this position comes down on this, it lifts the head right off the spinal column. So, the main thing is, any motorcycle accident, and I think that's why these numbers on the voluntary and the mandatory turn out to be almost exactly the same. The solution to the problem is avoid the accident.
Thank you very much, Senator, for coming. I think you have one more question.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, but accidents are accidents. They're not planned. Mm-hmm. So you can try to avoid them, but when they do occur, that's why they're called accidents. Do you know what happens to the human head when it hits a stationary object going 35 miles an hour?
I lost a dear friend of mine who actually flew both wearing helmets, and one of them went off the road. His head struck a power pole. Both were killed, both with helmets on. Obviously, the body is not designed to be airborne to strike something at 35 miles an hour.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
We will bounce around here a little bit. I think, Troy, you can probably be back on Wednesday, can't you? Thank you. And Bob Avery with Jim Welch, you can be back, so we'll put you at the bottom, and that's not because he wants you at the bottom. Chris Vieira, you're from over 100 miles away. Thank you for coming, partner.
Yes, Representative Montgomery, members of the board, it appears that my testimony is going to be covered by a much more eloquent speaker than me. As coordinator for A-Bay of Oregon, I would just ask you to help us put this issue behind us and let us expend our time and money and efforts on much more proactive motorcycle safety issues in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming and for your information. The elegant speakers don't get listened to near as much as people like yourself. We appreciate you being here because I know you're taking time off of your busy day to be with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lyle Irons, would you like to come forward or can you come back Wednesday if you're nearby? Okay, thank you. Let me bounce around and maybe we'll get back to you then. Frank Saxton?
Good morning.
Frank, thanks for being here.
My name is Frank Saxton. I'm the State Legislative Director for Bay of Oregon. I'm actually representing Brian Stovall, who's the Executive Director of Bike Pack of Oregon, who could not be here today. This is my first opportunity to testify before a hearing such as this, so I hope you'll indulge my jitter.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Just relax a little. We're more nervous up here than you are down there.
Thank you very much. Life is a series of trade-offs. You can go to the coast and enjoy the sun, and the cost of that is catching melanoma, which is a skin disease that kills 5 times more Americans than die on motorcycles every year. Should we outlaw sunbathing? Should we require people to wear long sleeve shirts and long pants and wide-brimmed hats when they're exposed to the sun? Opponents may say yes. That's the same basic argument that they're putting forward to require us to wear helmets. We don't agree with that. We think that life in a free country, we ought to be allowed to make choices about our own pursuit of happiness. We are not anti-helmet, as you said before. It's been brought up that helmets do provide some safety benefit. After all, it is a piece of safety equipment. And so it does provide some benefits. But there are also trade-offs there, and there are some downsides to wearing a helmet. I've been riding a motorcycle for 35 years, and I can tell you absolutely that helmets restrict your vision, they restrict your hearing, they make riding a motorcycle, which is very small relative to everything else that's on the road, more vulnerable. I've long since lost count of the near misses that I've had when somebody is about ready to violate my right of way that I couldn't see or hear because I was wearing a helmet. The implication that I hear from our opponents is that we're too stupid to be able to figure out for ourselves what we ought to be doing, so we need a government mandate to tell us what to do. As I said, I've been riding a motorcycle for a long time, and I think that I know more about this than the government does, and I think that I have the right to choose whether I want to wear a helmet or eye protection or caps or boots or whatever other safety equipment that I choose to wear. I'll keep it short because I know that we're running out of time here. I just wanted to mention, I'm sure you're all aware of this, but there are quite a few people in the gallery here who have taken a day off of work to come here They're not going to testify. They're just here to see their government in action. They support this legislation. We've been here session after session after session. Representative Lehman brought up the governor's objection to this bill, and of course, we went all the way through the Senate and all the way through the House last time, going to get a governor's veto. King George vetoed our Declaration of Independence, and yet we're a free country today. Perseverance is the strongest tool that you can have. These folks are willing to give up a day's pay to come in here to support their right to live in a free country. We'll be here next session if we have to. My grandchildren may be testifying to your grandchildren if that's what it takes. But we're very committed to this. And as Senator George said, we feel that the safety factor is accident avoidance. We are a lot smaller than everybody else on the road, and the way that you stay alive and live to be as old as I am is to avoid hitting anything. And that's what our training and education and sober riding programs are all about. Thank you very much. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Frank, for coming. I'm afraid to look down to my right because I'm sure he has a 5 miles an hour. But he's relayed. He won't ask at this time. Thank you, Representative Hill. We have one other, Robert Swan. Are you here? Robert Swan is not here. Okay. For the benefit of the audience, what we're planning to do is we will close the public hearing now. We have three other people scheduled to testify, and we will not have anybody else come forward and testify. You've all had the opportunities. If you want to, you can get on the list now to come back Wednesday morning. Our meeting starts at 8 o'clock. We would plan to have this first on the list to get to it. And there will be no secret games. We'll listen to the testimony of the three or four people we have left on this list right here, and then we will probably go into work session and vote on it in committee and then go into other bills. And I, too, thank you all very much for coming in today. I know you've got to work for a living, and we appreciate you taking the time off to be with us today. And we will proceed onward Wednesday morning. Janet, do you have any final plans for the committee?
No.
Okay, having said that, thank you all for coming. We're adjourned, and we'll reconvene Wednesday morning.
No.